Today on Gateway Unlocked.
We definitely no longer, a card processor business, but actually a payment, technology business. And open banking, we were just representing, another factor that, the proof that we realize in this multi-rail strategy. Yeah, it's again, it's about giving our consumer, choice, however they want to pay, using cards or devices, right, whenever. We're going to provide the technologies and the ways for them to do that.
Hi, and welcome to Gateway Unlocked, MasterCard Payment Gateway's podcast, where we connect with teammates from across the globe and organization on payment trends, innovation, and ideas that are shaping our business. I'm Anne Herrera, and today we're talking about open banking with Cecilia Lund and Diego Dos Santos.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Cecilia Lund. I'm in the open banking product team in London, where I work with our open banking solutions, particular payments, and our merchant payment solution.
Hi, my name is Diego. I'm a product director at MasterCard Payment Gateway Services. And I'm leading the new payments strategy for MasterCard Payment Gateway Services.
Well, it's really great to have both of you guys here. And I know you have a very busy schedule with open banking. So thank you for joining us today. So open banking, I feel that it's definitely top of mind for everyone in the payments industry, especially for the last few years. But while it might be a new phrase, it's really not a new concept, is it? It's a bit of an old concept. Can you guys share, what is the history here with open banking and really how it's matured over the decades?
Let me start. So I think it's fair to say that the UK is one of the leading markets when it comes to open banking. And it started with an initiative from the Competition and Markets Authority to increase competition and innovation in the industry. And it started in 2018. And they provided the framework to allow bank customers to securely share their data and give account access to third parties that wouldn't normally have access to those accounts. And that allows the third party to provide bank customers with better financial services, more choice, for example, in how to pay and ultimately lower prices. And Europe was a quick follower. So in September 2019, PSD2 came into force in Europe. And there's many other hotspots around the world. So Australia, where it's primarily about account access, South Africa, Mexico, Brazil. Mexico is really focused on financial inclusion, so a lot of areas have their own flavor of it or their own focus. In most markets, it's been driven by regulation, and the US, it was an industry-led initiative.
Exactly that. Just in terms of the US, they've been doing this for quite a long time, but like Cecilia said, is an industry-led approach. So basically, innovators, fintechs, and companies work together with banks to create a standard to share data among them, right? What we're seeing though is, like Cecilia said, UK and Europe, they are the leading in open banking space, especially because of they have this backed by regulators, which you can see a difference in terms of uptake and the speed this is happening.
Yeah, and it's estimated that close to, if not more than half of US adults are actually already participating in some form of open banking service. So either getting an aggregated view of their finances or in terms of lending is big in the US as well.
And in essence, is this a little bit like a bank transfer, but just improved, more sophisticated, more consumer friendly?
Yeah, it is improved because you have all the information is auto-populated. So that's a big improvement. So that reduces the margin for error, people mistyping, sending the payment to the wrong place. So everything's auto-populated. The journey on a smartphone is linked to the payer's online banking app. So that will open up automatically. It leverages the biometric authentication. So Face ID, thumbprint. It's actually so fast you almost don't notice it. So very frictionless. And then the payment's authenticated and authorized, and it's all with the payer's consent as part of the process.
No, that's great. I think it's interesting that you had, Cecilia, a great stat that you said, I forgot what the percentage was, but that a lot of U.S. people are already engaging with open banking, and they maybe it's just a new phrase that they haven't heard of. What are some examples of some open banking that perhaps even I'm engaging with and unaware of?
Yeah, so one can be personal finance management. So if you have an app where you're able to connect multiple accounts from different providers, so it can be payments accounts as well as credit cards, so connect them all together. And this can even be between countries as well. To get that consolidated view of it, it's a little bit scary actually, because you can see exactly what your financial position is, taking everything into account, so plus and minuses. What I found really useful as well personally is you can, or they identify subscriptions for you. So I actually found, you know, £5 had been taken every month for so many years and I completely forgot about it. So yeah, that can quite quickly save yourself. And I think subscriptions are becoming more and more common as well. So more and more services are subscription-based and it's really easy to forget about. And then your kids might sign up and you don't even know. So that is, open banking can really help bring that together. And when I couldn't remember which card I used to pay, I went to the open banking consolidator and searched for the transaction and it came up. So rather than going to each of the different apps. And finally, there's even cashback facilitated by open banking. So I've earned myself £20 or so by now. So I really recommend it. So, and then there's also where a lender might be using it. So then you'll be aware because you will have to consent. So they will tell you what you're consenting to, what data you're sharing, and what they're going to use it for. But maybe that's less obvious to people still, that that's actually open banking in the background. So if you've ever had to provide paper bank statements for a lending product, you know, to view mortgages, that can now be done electronically via open banking. So much more efficient. And also the data is more timely than if you compare to credit ratings agencies. It tends to be quite a big lag, and especially with the pandemic, when people's circumstances has changed a lot, having that accurate data is really useful.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the pandemic, because I do feel that, while yes, I recognize open banking has definitely been regulation-led in many different countries, I also think that open banking services seems to have really grown since the advent of the coronavirus pandemic. Have you guys been seeing that? Have you guys noticed that it's been of an uptick? Can you guys elaborate more on that?
Yeah, I can comment on that. It's a very good point, Anne. So what we notice, especially, you know, connecting what Cecilia said about using money management applications, that during the pandemic, we don't know exactly what are the reasons why, but we see the uptake in account aggregation type of applications where you can consolidate all your accounts and see in every single place or application, right, to help you better manage more, you know, your balance or, you know, your cash flow. We see an uptake that during the pandemic, possibly because during the pandemic, it brought some financial challenges for the majority of the population, right? Or maybe because they have more time available to actually explore search tools, right? But it's definitely, we can see a gradual uptake. And I think what is interesting as well, people don't need to know, consumers don't need to know exactly what is open banking or what kind of API is open banking use. What they need to understand is the benefits that open banking brings. And most importantly, they are in control. You know, any data point they want to share, they are given the consent and that can be revoked.
Yeah, and there was actually some MasterCard research from this year that showed that in the last year, 85% of consumers have tried at least one new emerging payment method. I think we found in open banking, it's first to take off was the account information, so that aggregation, and now payments are really accelerating at the moment.
And in essence, so I feel like this really gets consumers and customers and banks and businesses also closer to real-time payments, perhaps, especially that, I mean, that was essential during COVID, you know, especially if you went through some hardship times, understanding what's in your bank account, recognizing that, you know, this immediately came out versus when is this bill going to clear? When is this, you know, scheduled bill payment going to make it out of there?
Yeah, no, that's true. And there's, you know, you can sign up for alerts, you can track your spending over time, you can get hints as to, you know, you have, seem to have money left over, now's a good time to pay it back. And the in terms of lenders, they use it also, so not just how to make the decision on that initial credit, but also when to collect. So there's definitely, there's both a financial inclusion element in terms of getting more people into the financial system, but also in terms of debt management, so helping people manage their debt. And also making sure they don't sign up for products that they actually shouldn't have, because they might get them into trouble later. So even if the initial, you know, say it's declined, that might not be the result, you know, result they wanted, but if it's the right decision, then that's for the best. So I think having more timely insights is definitely helpful for everyone.
I love that. And it's also, it's an education, you know, I think that's important. Well, obviously through a gamut of industries, but education, having that transparency into what is your, you know, current financial situation for consumers. And then, you know, banks banks and merchants also having that insight and that transparency is essential, and it's wonderful. I think we'd be amiss if we didn't talk about the regulations though. So while I know we had very, you know, timely activities with COVID really exploding, you know, the amount of open banking happening across the globe, since 2018, I really feel this has been a more of a regulation driven. And I think that open banking is definitely a positive from perhaps SCA. Maybe it did SCA think secure customer authentication perhaps be a catalyst perhaps and also moving the growth in open banking?
So in terms of the strong customer authentication, I think the beauty of the open banking payments is that how elegant they managed to combine this. So meeting the payments directive requirements or revised payment on directive requirements, the PSD2, might be the strong customer authentication requirement, right? Which Cecilia, you know, previously described, you can easily at the checkout page in an e-commerce website, select your bank account, be redirect to your mobile banking app and use your biometrics to authenticate the payment. So basically meeting that something that you know, something that you have, and something that you are, right? So I think that could be a good opportunity to allow merchants to have another choice of payments to support, but also consumers as well to have another choice to make payments as well.
I'm glad you really talked also about PSD2. And then, you know, lastly, you know, what about GDPR? But, you know, that was another huge, significant regulatory trend. How has that pushed open banking along? How has that shaped it?
It's a very good question. I think what we're trying to emphasize here is that open banking is not about APIs or actually just payments, right? We're trying to show that open banking is about data, right? Mm-hmm. And in this 21st century, you know, digital economy that we have, lots of data is being generated, right? And when you're talking about regulation, we also need to understand that regulation doesn't create innovation. Normally, it's the other way around. Innovation is created, or regulation follows innovation. Someone already, or a group of people, or a cluster started creating something new, right? And then the regulators comes to implement a legal framework that everybody can have access to it in a fair way, right? So with all this data being generated, regulators understood that we customers own the data, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to have more control and visibility about how our data use. Going back to this, you know, data points that you want to decide who you're going to share with and why for how long, right? In order to have some benefit back, which could be a tailor-made product or services, right? So if you see GDPR was implemented first, right, kind of a paving the way for then the revised Payment Service Directive being implemented, which of course, taking into account GDPR, but also taking into account the payment side of things and creates, you know, a good framework for us to start exploring with open banking.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And especially with, you know, a little bit of a new payment, you know, there's always, adoption, of course, understanding advantages, but also the security behind that and making sure it's a secure payment. I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the advantages of open banking for both merchants and then also for customers or consumers. You know, I could definitely see so many advantages for merchants, and I'd love for you guys to tell me more. Obviously, you know, consumer insights, getting that data, perhaps simplifying processes. What else is there?
If we start by building on the security, so the kind of safety and security theme. So one is, we talked about, there's consents required. Authentication happens at the customer's trusted bank. It's got strong customer authentication, leverages the biometrics, et cetera. And importantly, the payer's account details are not shared with the merchants. And we also have some recent research that 85% of consumers who don't store the card on files with merchants, they say it's because of security concerns. So the fact that open banking, that the details are not shared with the merchant, that's helpful. It can also help the merchant as well, because they don't have that burden of looking after it appropriately. And also the merchant's account details are auto-populated, so they can't be changed, which is another opportunity for fraud, you know, trying to change the destination account.
No, please just complement what Cecilia said. So you have this, you know, solution that makes the checkout frictionless, right, and safer, right, for the consumer and for the merchant as well, right? But also to add on top of that, especially for the merchant side, you have a faster settlement, which helps with the merchant's cash flows, right? Especially if you look into, you know, SME merchants, right, which is very important for them. So those factors are important. And reach, by default, for example, in the UK, you're going to have access to, you know, over 95% of account holders, right, to begin with. So for day one, this is actually, you know, it's a good and important number to take into account as well. So again, it goes down to choice, merchants understanding what is the digital strategy, their business model, which use case they support, and to see if, you know, open banking account-to-account payments, you know, is the best solution for them.
Yeah, I love that you brought up SMEs, just because I really feel that, and I understand, you know, MasterCard Payment Gateway Services, we're here to support banks, you know, help empower their SMEs, take these micro businesses and really expand them into larger businesses with a global reach. And I feel that based off of our conversation, open banking is kind of rewriting the rules. It's giving these small micro businesses an opportunity to really play on the international stage.
No, indeed. And we are just scratching the surface, right? There are so many other use cases that, you know, we can support with open banking. And it has the framework evolves, right, to be able to tap into all the use cases like subscriptions and so on. And even, you know, moving perhaps into in-store payments as well, leveraging open banking. So, yeah, it's an exciting time, especially if you're, you know, SME merchant in the digital space.
Yeah, so what's been great as well is that if we talk about other use cases, so one of the use cases that MasterCard is live in the UK is pay off your credit card balance. So as an alternative to settling with a debit card, open banking is used instead. And what's been great there is we've seen such a good uptake. So it's really given us that confidence that people are, one, willing to try something new, and then secondly, that they like the process, because we see every month more and more. No, so people who tried it once, they come back, and it's growing as well. So we really quickly ramped up the penetration of this payment method for that use case. So that's been great to see.
No, that is great. And that really leads us into, you know, what are some other consumer benefits? Diego, you had brought up, you know, kind of your face-to-face in-person payments. I can especially see, you know, obviously very much during COVID, you know, sometimes if you had a false decline in person, I mean, this is very much in person, you know, that the account funds are there, they can confirm their funds, versus if you were, you know, in the store, you know, getting your petrol or your groceries, and for some reason your card was declined for suspected fraud, you didn't know what to do if you didn't have another card on file. You know, this is excellent.
Yeah, it is, because of the reach as well. So whatever bank account you do have, or whatever mobile banking app you have installed in your, for example, your device, you can quickly, you know, choose as an alternative way to complete a purchase, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and what's great as well is that everything's pre-populated, so you don't have to remember password or security codes, like particularly not on mobile. And also, you know, with car payments, plenty of times I've been sat on the sofa and you remember your car number, but not the code, and you have to get up and dig through your handbag. And here, there's no need for that. So, because it's all the biometric authentication. So that's really great. And so again, our research, we know that about 35% of card payments still involve manual data entry on checkout.
I'm one of those people. I've got the majority of my card memorized, but then I get to like the last three digits and I'm like, oh, and I always twist them around by accident. And then I'm fumbling through my purse and sometimes, you know, the least opportune moment, most definitely. So I feel that adoption is probably just starting, you know, it's an evolution. We're moving to great heights and great opportunity, most definitely. With small businesses specifically, do you think there's a lack of awareness perhaps with them? Like, how is that adoption going? I feel like consumers, we've talked a lot about consumer adoption, you know, that's growing exponentially. What about, you know, your larger tier merchants and then those small businesses?
So the way we see it so far is that we know that the benefit, especially in terms of open banking payment side of things, right? It's very beneficial for merchants, right? Especially for small and mid-sized merchants. I think what is missing perhaps a little bit of education in terms of how this actually works and in terms of what this would have for the merchants, right? Combined with very easy ways to onboard those merchants into this open banking payments platform, right? There are several technical ways that we can talk about, you know, APIs, hosted checkout, things like that. But I think to be very successful in this space, if you are TPP or using the open banking terminology or permit payment initiation service provider, you need to take into account that less friction to onboard the merchant should be one of the key priorities if you want to have a great uptake for your open banking merchant payment offer.
I'm sure even with more of your B2B payments with small businesses as well. I'm sure that's also, I mean, it helps businesses keep running. When you're a small business, a family-owned business, that's, I'm sure, definitely essential. The one thing that I'm seeing as a consistent thread through our conversation is obviously, you know, the data and how valuable it is, but also how this innovation has really worked with our innovation of payments overall. You know, we think back to the history of MasterCard from being, you know, card, physical payments, and then we talk about web enablement payments, e-commerce. And then we talk about mobile first payments and click to pay and other solutions and wallets. And finally, I think in this, we've moved, you know, light years ahead to it's APIs. And it's more of an API first approach, most definitely.
All our solutions in Europe are API based only. So yeah, and to your point about MasterCard's evolution. So we started out what we call kind of single rail, fully focused on cards. Now we've diversified across multiple rails. So bank account based payments. So one in terms of infrastructure with the acquisition of VocaLink, Transfast and Nets, corporate services. Of course, in open banking, we have the acquisition of Finicity, which, very much multiplied our open banking employees. To say the least. So but also digital wallets and more recently blockchain. So that multi-rail vision is really being executed on now, which is great to see.
Exactly. We definitely no longer, you know, a card processor business, but actually a payment, you know, technology business. And you know, open banking, we were just representing, you know, another factor that, you know, the proof that we realize in this multi-rail strategy. Yeah, it's about giving our consumer, you know, choice, however they want to pay, using cards or devices, right? Whenever we're going to provide the technologies and the ways for them to do that.
Is it also a challenge, I would think, from taking these legacy systems and bringing them up to date into new API architecture and standardizing that a bit. I mean, we talked about regulations and regulatory standards and technical standards, but I'm assuming we have a massive team working on this just as well, as really trying to standardize everything so that it does work smoothly for our banks and our bankers, our bank partners' customers.
Yeah. I mean, if I start on the open banking side, and I'll let Diego talk about the gateway side of things, because with this product, the merchant payment solution, we really combine those two assets. In open banking, we're brand new. So we don't have to worry about the legacy systems, but being brand new has its own kind of challenges. So, and we see differences in different markets. There's a number of different API standards across Europe. And what our Open Banking Connect product does is it takes away that pain of that complexity from our customers. So we work with each of the standards, and even within the standards, the different banks have different interpretations of the standards. So we deal with that complexity on behalf of the customers. And we provide a set of unified APIs that can be used across obviously the different underlying payment rails, the different open banking standards, et cetera. So different challenges in being new, and sometimes we are the first ones to connect to a bank.
MasterCard Payment Gateway Service is an agnostic payment gateway. That means that we not only support MasterCard payment solutions, but also others as well, right? So we have over 30 type payment methods that we support in the gateway. Each payment method might be a different network, might have its own compliance, and so on. So we have a huge team worldwide working on a daily basis to make sure that we are compliant, have a robust and the connectivity that our customers need to have a seamless, fast payment process end to end.
No, that's incredibly exciting. And I can't, I know how big that team is actually, Diego. You guys are a very, very busy team. And it is incredibly complex. I almost envision just a beautiful weave of different colors and just trying to unravel them and making sure they're all going, straight and in the right way. And definitely wonderful challenges. We all love a good challenge. To adoption. So I was reading a study, and I think it was by VocaLink, and Cecilia, I think I were perhaps reading the same study, and I was so excited to read. So back in January of 2018, they had said that there was like 2 million open banking transactions a month. And now March of 2020, it's 409.5 million. I mean, it feels like this is, just endless potential. But, what are you guys seeing on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, no, so, and the stats that you saw, I think that includes the account information calls, as well as the payment initiation calls. And there tends to be way more of the account information because those apps will be constantly updating, maybe four times a day, et cetera. Whereas in payments, you kind of have that one payment and so on. So, but yeah, it's correct that growth has been really great. I think, especially on the payment side, there's that quote of, you always overestimate the rate of change on a two-year horizon, but you underestimate it on a decade. And open banking makes me think of that a little bit. I think it was Bill Gates. Because, we saw uptake from the start, but perhaps it took that kind of 2+ years to really ramp up, especially on the payment side. But we're seeing that now. So yeah, lots of records being broken.
Yeah, indeed. I think my thought is that we can definitely tell, just the fact that you presented that open banking is no longer a trend, but it's actually a reality, right? And it's still time, for, our customers and, players to participate. And this is going to be a very disruptive way of doing business moving forward.
There was also the open banking implementation entity, they published a report, so end of 2020, and there was over 100 providers in the UK, and about 25 of them payments arena.
It's definitely unstoppable. It feels like it's unstoppable. It's been a game changer for the payments industry, and then also for consumers. And and definitely for innovation. What about regionally? I know you had mentioned there were, you know, the UK, EU, there were some real pockets of a lot of growth and a lot of maturity. I think it's what now 36 countries and the EU are both hosts to kind of open banking initiatives. You know, 18 months after the open banking regulation came into effect, what are we seeing? What are we seeing from both, you know, adoption, interest, maturity? And then also, I think we would be lax to forget about the post-Brexit strategy system. How is that working to really mature the market?
Yeah, so I guess in Europe, so one other region that's where we see a lot of activity is the Nordics. So that's probably about the propensity for e-commerce and digital overall. So open banking kind of being swept up in that wave.
We're definitely seeing, you know, buzz and demand, right? We always have, you know, the typical, you know, adoption. We always have the innovators going first, right? The disruptors, right? Which has been pretty much the digital bank start to sharing, at least the bare minimum, you know, open the data as per, you know, request of the regulator, right? And then increasingly we can see then, you know, open more, you know, and create more products and services, right? But it's just the beginning, right? There is so much more to explore. And even though, look, this is, we're talking about UK, if you look at Europe as a continent, right? Even though they in theory should have the same standard, right? What we notice as we engage with, you know, European customers that different countries, they have different, they are in different status, right? They're, you know, if you look at Germany, France, Italy, like Cecilia mentioned, the Nordics, right, Baltics, they all have their own, you know, local payment solution, and they are in different stages of the open banking adoption, promoting, installing this, right, which creates a little bit of a challenge, you know, especially in terms of the standard side of things. But we've been working closely, you know, with our colleagues in Europe to make sure that we can address that. But there is a high demand. We already have adopters. Most of them, they're, we call the innovators, right? The first ones to participate. And we gradually see, you know, the interest moving to execution with the European customer, with the European demand within open banking. Initial stage tends to be more aggregation type of solutions, which Cecilia mentioned, right? And then we are gradually seeing more and more payment initiation solutions popping up in the market as well.
Yeah, and actually what we found as well is like, so each market or each kind of sub-region has its own dynamic. So in some markets you have a, so one, it depends on what's the speed of the underlying payment rail, because open banking is only as fast as that underlying payment rail. Some markets have, for example, in Sweden, there's Swish. So that's a, the banks got together, that provides peer-to-peer real-time money movement. So again, that's a dynamic that impacts open banking. Our gateway business will have a lot of insights on this in terms of, there's also markets where account-to-account payments are already commonplace, but we can provide a faster service, more reliable, cheaper. So I guess that has the benefit of people already being used to paying from their bank accounts. So
It's a good point, Cecilia. It's a different go-to-market strategy, right? So we have like IDEO in the Netherlands, or, you know, in Germany or in the Baltics, you have, you know, the bank links, where it's already, you know, people already used to, or in the UK, people already used to do PayPal, right? Which is a kind of a similar idea as well. But when you look at countries like, for example, Italy, I have close friends from that. And I remember being there a couple of years ago and asking about open banking and things like that. And I got several, you know, skeptical Italian friends. They, you know, it's not something that I would see myself doing it. But because that, you know, the card or the cash culture is still very strong, right? But it, the uptake might take longer, right? Because it's not only about the technology, but also changing the consumer behavior towards be more inclined or sharing the, you know, the data with their consent and control, and also adopting online fast payments as well as a way to make a purchase.
Yeah, and another dynamic in consumer uptake will be, so obviously on cards, there's a lot of cards with cashback or points, and especially in UK and Spain, that's, you know, people are points junkies, as they're sometimes called. So that's really important. Obviously, on open banking, the merchant, for example, could opt to provide an incentive for people to use it as well if they want to drive adoption or drive people that way. So I know I've seen a couple of those cases, but that might become more commonplace as well. So I think that's another factor.
I think this is all incredibly exciting. And I love that you brought up, Diego, about, you know, kind of the speed and the speed of data, and Cecilia as well, you know, about how that just helps things move and helps products move and helps products innovate. And I know we've always had wonderful relationships with our banking partners, our banking customers, but this is really the next phase of how our collaboration can deliver such superior products for both them and then also for their customers and their consumers. How are you seeing us work with banks to really deliver and innovate and get some great solutions to market?
I'm just going to make a quick comment. I think banks, they are in a unique position here to take a step back and rethink their overall strategy to engage with their customers, right? In the same way that now, that if we're talking about UK and Europe, right, that they have to be compliant with the open banking request to share the data, right? And they need to address that. There's also an opportunity as well for them to capture and rethink how they can develop great products, more customer-centric, right? Which not only the data they currently have from the consumers or the customers, but also, you know, the data that the consumer has with different providers as well. Right. So I think that it's a unique opportunity, and that's what I think we'll be trying to present to our, you know, MasterCard customers, you know, the new horizon, right, and how we can work together to explore that.
In relative terms, easy for our customers, because we're able to provide that full suite of technology, a merchant portal to view the transaction, and everything can be white labeled to our customers.
Yeah, it's spot on, Cecilia. I think we've been working with MPGS for a long time now.
I think that would be great. You guys seem like a great duo. Okay, so my very favorite part of the entire podcast is, you know, we're almost at time anyways. So you have a captive audience here, Cecilia and Diego. You know, in 5 years, and I know we had already made the comments of, you know, 2 years is perhaps you overstretch your ideas, your expectations, and 10 years, you know, you've exceeded them. But so we'll start in the middle. We'll start in 5 years. You know, where do you see open banking in 5 years? Probably no longer considered alternative. Maybe it's considered mainstream. Not holding you to these expectations or predictions, of course, but you've got a captive audience. Let us know. What do you think about open banking in 5 years from now?
Yeah, I think on the payment side, I do think we'll see strong adoption. And I think we'll also see it increasingly being brought to the physical world. So bringing it into stores, et cetera, you know, especially smaller stores. For big chains, there has a challenge of, you know, the checkout system, et cetera. But for smaller physical merchants, I think it could be a great leverage. Then we also have initiatives such as variable recurring payments. So what that means is that with VRPs, the payer can give ongoing consent for repeated payments, and the exact amount of each payment is not agreed in advance. So basically, the payer sets up some rules for frequency and maximum amounts, maximum total amounts, and that means that open banking could replace direct debits, at least partly, could be used for bill payments, and also use cases such as online groceries. And in the UK, in July, there was a decision to mandate VRPs for sweeping purposes, and sweeping means that it's only payments to and from the same legal entity, and that was mandated for the UK's larger banks. So whilst that doesn't enable the bill payment use case, because you'll be paying a different entity rather than sweeping money between your own accounts, that's given a big boost to the likelihood of VRPs being implemented. So that's getting people excited.
Wow, what should I say after that? That's fantastic, isn't it? That was great. Cecilia's great, isn't it? So, I think just to be very utopic with my thoughts, I like to use the term that I think was a person called Luis Belmont, kind of a strong advocate of open banking, said about B2Me, right? Which leads to open finance, right? What I'd like to see in the next 5 years is not only having, you know, access of saving accounts, but more like what Australia is trying to do, different type of accounts, right? Your phone account, your phone bill account, your gas, whatever, everything you combine, right, is being part of this ecosystem, right? Your pension, right, be able to see and manage, see the, you know, how red you are or how blue you are, you know, depending on your personal finances. I really want to see this embedded in our, you know, behavior, and forget spreadsheets. We don't need spreadsheets after that.
Yeah, I do think it's great for a kind of busy person, and we're all busy. You know, there's so much we're managing, work, home, fun, and making it easier. So one, having everything on your phone, having it all aggregated, all in one place, getting alerts. Obviously, you can't have too many alerts, but sometimes they're really good. So, yeah, that's definitely made it easier. And I was happy to see that I actually managed, so I'd already consolidated my UK accounts, but then I was able to link my Swedish bank account as well. And I could truly get my net position.
Yeah, no, that's very exciting. I think that this is, like I said earlier, it's a game changer. It is an evolution, and we are at the start of it, most definitely. So it was very exciting to share some time with you guys who are in the middle of it all. I think we're just at time. So I want to say thank you so much, and I will talk to you guys next time.